Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd and my co-host, Canucks insider Thomas Drantz, who also covers the team for The Athletic. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. I'm back. Happy to be back on the show. Did not listen yesterday, Trans, so you'll have to catch me up on everything that happened yesterday. But big day today. For possibly the last time, the Canucks and the Arizona Coyotes meet at Rogers Arena.
Wild, eh?
It is, although maybe not surprising. And for people who are just catching up here, Frank's...
Sorry, are you talking to me?
I am, yes. For Daily Faceoff's Frank Saravelli tweeting just a matter of minutes ago, sources tell Daily Faceoff, NHL, Arizona Coyotes, and Smith Entertainment Group have made significant progress on the framework of an agreement to relocate the Coyotes to Salt Lake City, Utah. NHL memo updated governors today. Now, Frank stresses, not done, many layers and lawyers, much work to do, but certainly everything pointing in one direction here.
The NHL is absolutely looking at the Coyotes and saying, we want to take Utah a different place.
Yes. That's exactly what they're doing. But apparently, they're going to keep...
That was awful.
Apparently, they're keeping Alex Morello's group in the mix for an expansion franchise to come back to Arizona down the road, or at least that's what it sounds. Again, this is all unofficial and in the works and all that, yada, yada, yada. But the saga of the Arizona Coyotes will never end. I get wanting to go back to that market, but with that owner?
Not with that owner. It's been a mess.
How could you possibly do it with that owner?
When they got outspent 5-1 on the referendum that could have saved the team, that it was really always going to be very hard to come back from... that, right? I mean, that retail local politics referendum, like, you got to at least match your opponent's spend. At least, I mean, you should be overwhelming them if you actually want the team. That was just a lack of seriousness that really made it feel like it was never going to be feasible to move forward.
I think
that
also
in that market,
you look at their trade deadline activity and selling guys off for way less than they could have got to them because they didn't want to retain salary. And that also feels like, well, they're not going to be it's not my draft picks. You know what I mean? I'll just save the money because I don't really care if we get a third or a sixth round draft pick. I just want to, it's going to be Ryan Smith's problem in Utah down the road. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens here. But it looks like potentially the Arizona Coyotes saga could be at least temporarily over soon.
Yeah, and, you know, it coming out before, an interesting Canucks game, right? Maybe a little bit of an edge. I mean, you'd think there's a bit of a distraction.
You would think so.
Right? I mean, pretty hard to keep your mind on the game tonight with people like Utah King about it.
Please
stop. Yeah. So, you know.
And, I mean, they lost, it was just last night, right? 5-0 in Seattle?
Yep.
Yeah. So
second leg of a back-to-back. Lots of things moving.
The franchise
in the
might
favor.
Be moving.
Connor McDavid not playing. And that's sort of, this is the day to wrap up the Pacific, right? I mean, no McDavid. Oilers hosting a much trickier opponent than you are, right? You're up to what? Is it a 5-point lead? A 5-point lead in the standings over the Oilers? They have two games in hand and a head-to-head remaining. You know, even if they keep pace with you tonight, it's going to be interesting next week, but if they don't, if both results go your way tonight, and it's certainly shaping up to be a pick 'em in Edmonton, and the Canucks are going to be heavily favored, and the line might even move more toward Vancouver with the news of the day, to me, that's, you know, an opportunity. I don't want to, like, do the big game thing. You know how I feel about the last 20% of the season.
Sure, and especially it's hard to be like, this is a big game against the Arizona Coyotes.
Yeah, it's more that, like, the conditions are just about perfect.
Yeah.
You know, it's like... The Canucks have stepped up to hole one on Augusta, and it's like just as they step up, the wind stops. You know, it's like the conditions are really good for you to nail this shot.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a big opportunity to reduce the drama. I mean, look, even, I will say, no matter what happens tonight, if you lose in Edmonton in regulation on Saturday, it's kind of going to add some spice back to the proceedings.
But only a little. I mean, if both results go your way tonight, you know, you're
seven,
six,
up.
Seven up.
Yeah.
Even if you lose that head to head,
still five.
You're fine.
Yeah.
So tonight, if both results go the Canucks' way, I think it's pretty much done.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly, you know, that, like, you'd get plus money on both results going the Canucks' way if you wanted to put spice on the money line and parlay them both. But not a lot of it, right? not quite two to one.
By the way, it's also a big night for another reason. It is the 34th annual telethon for the Canucks, benefiting the Canucks
Very
for
cool.
Kids Fund. Always a massive night for Canucks and Canucks fans. For different charities in the community. Last year it was $7.6 million, so a chance to crest $100 million total in this event's history tonight. And of course, this goes to charities like BC Children's Hospital, Canucks Autism Network, Canuck Place, Ronald McDonald House, a bunch of education initiatives as well, Canucks Family Education Center, Sarah McLachlan School of Music, among others, grassroots hockey in the community, just dozens, literally dozens of really, really important organizations and charities in our community that this benefits. So it's a really special night. You can donate right now, canucks.com/telethon. They call it a telethon because it's still a TV event, but there's no phones. You don't have to call. You just go to the website, canucks.com/telethon. If you donate before midnight tonight, April 10th, you will be entered to win a 2024 Toyota Corolla hatchback CVT SE. So there you go. You entered to win a brand new car if you donate tonight before midnight. Link is open right now. Again, it's canucks.com/telethon. And really, whatever you can give, if it's a little, if it's a lot, if you want to do, you know, $8 in honor of Connor Garland and his season, that counts. If you want to do a bigger amount, that's awesome too. Whatever you can give, it's, again, just a really, really phenomenal event.
Thinking about team names, especially because Ryan Smith tweeted the, you know, soliciting team names for the potential Utah NHL franchise. The state bird of Utah is the California Seagull. It's like, you can't do that.
The Utah California Seagulls? What? But also, yeah, wait, how the heck did that become the state bird?
Yeah, I don't know about that one, right?
That's bizarre.
The state fossil is the Allosaurus.
Sure.
That's the dinosaur that always had sunburns.
Why do they even have a state fossil?
The state motto is one word, industry. That's a thing to zone something in SimCity, man.
Also, like, I've been to Utah. I'm not sure that industry is the first thing that comes to mind. Now, they're beautiful, beautiful state. But, like, it's not like, oh, yeah, the factories of Utah is not exactly what springs to mind.
They have a state firearm. That's
sure,
very American.
Sure. What is it?
The John M. Browning designed M1911 automatic pistol.
That rolls right off the tongue. The Utah Browning automatic pistols. There we go.
The Utah Grizzlies. I mean, it's already been done. That's the best name.
All right. It is Wednesday. It's 10 after 12. That means it is time for the crossover with Don Taylor and Rick Dollywall from Donnie and Dolly on Check TV. You can check them out Monday to Friday, 10 to noon. The crossover is brought to you by Besant Motors, powering the playoff drive, home of over 400 pre-owned vehicles, and where the players go. Donnie, Rick, what's going on, guys?
Utah Grizzlies, come on. We can do better than that, can't we?
I don't know.
Grizzlies has been done. It's been
it's
done
really
in
been
Vancouver.
Done.
It's been done in Utah and Memphis.
Yeah,
that's not
twice.
That's definitely
get
not
creative,
happening.
Guys.
Exceptional. What's your submission, Rick? What would you call them?
We had what do we have? Donnie and I had one this morning.
Well, you like the Shakers.
Salt Lake City Shakers.
You know what? Shakers. I don't hate it. Am I missing something? What's
oh.
a shaker?
Oh.
Just like a mover and a shaker? Yeah.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm old. So I'm old, as you guys know, and I talk about that a lot. But it's so boring. I get it. But Salt Lake Eagles, which has been proposed out there, there's some history there. Eagles hasn't been used, I think, maybe a long time ago in the NHL, but not for a long time. Used to be a team called the Salt Lake City Golden Eagles in the old Western League that I grew up with. That's not bad. Stags has been mentioned.
Yeah. I like the Stags.
The Salt Lake, Utah
what was the other
Stags.
One?
And the Yeti. The Yeti.
Yeti.
Another one.
Yeti. Yeti.
Yeti. Yeah. That feels like ripping off the Kraken.
Yeah, but
I don't like that.
How about
That's
this one
exactly
for you?
What we said.
How about this one for you? A tribute to Utah's pioneer history, but also a tribute to the way we talk about hockey teams today. The Utah Wagon. Tell me that's not cool.
I actually kind of like that. The Wagons?
Yeah, the Wagon. No,
well,
just the Wagon.
That's not bad.
Right?
I'm ripping it off for tomorrow's show.
They're a Wagon.
It's good.
What about the Rattlesnakes?
That's good.
The Utah Rattlesnakes?
I don't hate it.
That's pretty good.
Are rattlesnakes big in Utah?
I literally just searched Utah animals, and it was on the list. So there we go. Apparently they are.
Safe bet.
I just think
there's been a lot of submissions that we can't talk about regarding what you could call a team Utah and their history.
Hey, guys, if they do move to Salt Lake City next year, tonight could be the last game against the Coyotes for the Canucks.
Yeah,
a long and storied rivalry.
A video tribute for the Coyotes today.
Oh my God!
Although it's one of the things we're hearing from this reporting from Frank Saravalli and then Elliot Friedman is that part of this deal might be okay. We're going to take the Coyotes to Salt Lake for next year, but Alex Morello, don't worry, you build that arena, and we're going to give you another team back. And look, I can understand a little bit wanting to go back to Phoenix. But how do you go back with this owner who's just been so up and down and so all over the place in his time with the team?
Yeah, I just the thought of them possibly moving to Utah and then an expansion team being going back to Phoenix coupled with or tripled with a team maybe back in Atlanta. I can't wrap my head around that. Been there, done that.
So the Coyotes have missed the playoffs 11 of the past 12 years, right? And so you're going to bring them back in a couple of years or whatever and give them an expansion team. Like, really? You know?
Yeah. Oh, it's such a big television market. And it's such a vibrant market. There's so many reasons why. And honestly, there was a time in the late 90s, the early 2000s, when that team was located in downtown Phoenix before the exodus to Glendale, where there was no reason to think that this wouldn't be viable for the next 20 years. You know, it's just things went off the rails due to a silly arena deal and mismanagement over multiple decades.
Yeah, and Thomas, I'm sure you've been to Glendale but for people who haven't, it's way out there.
Way out.
I remember the first time I traveled there.
It is.
And I guess the thought was that there would be development there, but then 08 hit and that financial crisis, and there wasn't development. So when you travel, you're going through farmland. You've done that drive, Thomas. It's
many times.
It's just way out there. And people go, well, what are you talking about? It works for the Cardinals. Well, that's the NFL, and that's eight, nine times a year. It's completely different. And I know it was cheap, so I get the attraction there, but it just wasn't well thought out.
Yep.
Can't have a suburban barn. 25 years of hockey history has proven to us the suburban barn doesn't work.
I think it's
out of downtown.
And I think, it's not as if, for as much as people, we lump all the Sun Belt teams together, right? Like, you look at the culture that's around the team in Nashville, the success that Dallas has, especially when they're winning. You throw Florida in the mix now, Tampa. It can work. It's just been so incredibly mismanaged. So I don't have a problem necessarily with them going back there. But again, as I said, going back with that owner just doesn't seem to make a ton of sense. So, all right, as you said, Rick, maybe the last meeting between the Canucks and the Arizona Coyotes tonight at Rogers Arena. And Rick Tocchet wouldn't confirm it, said he was going to talk to Ian Clark. But it looked like, based on practice, that Archer Seelovs might get the start in net. Of course, he's 3-for-3 this year, 3 games. 3 wins, rebounded from a slow start against the Vegas Golden Knights. What do you think about the Canucks? Donnie, we'll start with you, possibly rolling with Seelovs for a second straight start here.
Well, I put a lot of stock into Rick Tocchet's interviews, and you can just tell most of the time when he really likes a player. And it seems that, and he talks a lot about Archer Seelovs or Seelovs, looking big in the net and not letting bad moments get to him. Like the other night with the 2-0 deficit, he clearly really, really likes him. I'm not saying he doesn't like Casey Smith, but clearly right now he's more of a fan of Shelov's, and I put a lot of stock in that. And it's hard to disagree with him. He's a battler, and I think Tocchet likes that at any position, forward, defense, and even goalie. So I'm not surprised to be going with Shelov's tonight.
You know, when I checked in with Shelov's around Christmas time, was when he was in Abbotsford. You know, someone told me he was having consistency issues, and you know he wasn't ripping it up this year. And I think it was about 3 or 4 weeks ago. You guys remember he let that goal from center ice? It was on the road.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, you remember? Hey, credit to the kid for coming in. And you know what? So look at the dynamics of what's happening. If Shelov's comes in and shows them the rest of the way, because I'll tell you something else that Tocchet said yesterday that was interesting, is they may keep 3 goaltenders for the playoffs. And so if you keep Shelov's around, you know, does that hurt Abbotsford, you know, and their chances? Mm-hmm. You know, I know they got Topolio there in Abbey, and they got Sawchuk in
Who
there
is
as
that?
Well.
They got a new guy in the crease there, Rick?
No. Do both. You messed up both names. Sawchuk.
Sachenko.
Be pretty sick if they had Sawchuk in the minors.
Close.
Sawchuk. Sawchuk.
One of the great goaltenders of all time.
I was in the neighborhood. Okay, will you let me finish my thoughts, Thomas?
You see what I have to deal with every day.
Sorry. I need.
Listen.
I need you to say the current starter in Abbotsford one more time.
Topolio.
Isn't that the Topolio. Sea monster that lives in Lake Okanagan?
There's a vaccination for that.
Okay, will you let me finish, Thomas?
Sorry.
Quit cackling. So listen. If that could hurt the Abbotsford playoff chances if you keep him up here with the Vancouver in the playoffs. But anyways, what does it do in the offseason? Shelov's, you know, is he going to show enough here down the road? No, Donnie, is he going to show enough down here down the road here so the Canucks say that they don't have to go out and, you know, re-sign you-know-who's probably not happy not playing right now. So who's the backup next year?
DeSmith is a UFA, right? So that maybe that plays into right?
That's what I mean. Yeah. So does it play in roll into whether you bring DeSmith back? And, you know, Shelov's, he's got a chance to impress the brass here right down the stretch here, and this is all boding well for him?
With Shelov's, Rick, do you have any sense of whether or not the club would be prepared to make him the backup next season or if they'd prefer to see him play 45 games?
I fully expect them to check into what it would cost to re-sign DeSmith as a UFA. And I don't see DeSmith taking a pay cut. And, you know, he's posted. I know in the last couple of weeks he struggled. He got a lot of heat from that LA game. He got a lot of heat for that Minnesota game. He got a lot of heat in the market. But I still say his overall body of work in Vancouver, veteran goaltender, $1.8 million, he did good. And, you know, he gave the Canucks some good nights when Demko needed the rest. Demko was hurt. I still like them taking the veteran backup route on in goal. They tried you-know-who a couple of years ago. Didn't work out. Put them on waivers. They spent less than a million on the backup goaltender, and it didn't work.
He means Spencer name? Martin, but like,
put on waivers.
When did Spencer Martin become Voldemort?
I said the guy that was here when they, you know, it didn't work. It didn't work. You got to be honest. It didn't work.
You make it sound like he was a household name.
You know who.
You make all due respect.
You make it sound like he tried to kill Harry Potter.
Hey, so we're in Vancouver. It's a hockey market, and we don't know who is you know who? Come on.
When it's Spencer Martin.
We're not in Columbus.
Sorry, I knew. I picked it up immediately. Yeah, okay. But I think both our co-hosts were legitimately like, huh? Wait.
Yeah,
So you didn't know I was talking about? Come on, Donnie.
Well, no, there were a couple of people in the studio here that were wondering who you were talking about.
No, you guys should have known. Thomas, you picked up on it, right?
I did. I knew exactly who you meant.
Let's get back to the Abbotsford goaltenders.
Yeah, thank you. But anyways, I fully expect them to take a run at trying to re-sign Casey DeSmith, 100%.
Looks like, so at morning skate today, and I wasn't there, but watchful eyes in the stands. Kevin Woodley, thank you. let me know that Neil Zaman, Mark Friedman, and Noah Juulsen, along with Vasily Podkolzin, skated hard following the morning skate, which implies to me that Lindholm may, in fact, return this evening. Gentlemen, even before the injury, what were you seeing from Lindholm? What do you want to see from him before the playoffs start to sort of have confidence that he can make an impact for this group come the postseason?
Can it come down to just goals and assists and just a little bit more offensive production? Mm. I know that's really, really simple, but I'm sorry. And I know they're playing mean-nothing games. I'm looking at what Podkolzin – but Kuzmenko – why did I say Podkolzin? You got me all rattled here with the you-know-who thing.
Yeah.
What Kuzmenko's doing in Calgary, and I can't help it but strip it down to goals and assists and points for Lindholm.
Yeah.
That and just – I mean, I know he's won 60% of his faceoffs with a bad wrist, and that's commendable, right? But I just want to see more production offensively, and I want to notice him more. I don't know. Is that asking too much? Especially, this is what I don't get when it comes to Lindholm. And look, I'm not a doctor, as you know. I don't know who you know who was, but he has a bad wrist. I understand that, but there's so much going on. There's so much at stake for him personally. He's going to be a UFA. We heard about him. Rick, you talked about him turning down $8 million a season with Calgary. How much is this costing him? So it's not just it's not just about the Canucks doing well if Lindholm plays well. It's Lindholm doing well financially if Lindholm plays well. So, yeah, just more production, obviously, and just get noticed out there. They gave up a lot for him.
They gave up a lot for him.
And I know they got rid of Kuzmenko's salary, but they still gave up a lot for him.
Donnie, when they gave up what they gave up for Lindholm, it was the belief that internally, are we okay with this being a rental? And the answer was yes. Mm-hmm. They are okay with Lindholm being a rental. That's the high gamble stakes. Okay, you re-sign him, great. If not, he's a rental. That's it. Obviously, you want to see more production. I think they traded for him to be a difference maker in the top six. That's not happening. He's a third line center, and could he have been a winger in the top six? I don't think so. He wants to play center. He's going to come back tonight as a centerman. That's what he said in his interview yesterday. He's not as comfortable on the wing. So did the Canucks bring him into town? Did they think he was going to be a centerman or a winger? The bottom line is he's a centerman, and they're strong up the middle in the top six up the ice. So he is what he is. You hope to heck he can be some sort of a difference maker. They love the face-off circle, the wins. They love the defensive play, but boy, oh boy, you like to see more offense. And as Donnie mentioned on the show today, Andrei Kuzmenko, he's red hot, guys. What's he got, Donnie? 19 points in 24 games in Calgary. That's not the end be all, but I mean, that guy's producing for Calgary. This guy has not produced at that rate in Vancouver.
Well, and to your point about needing to see more offense from – go ahead, Donnie.
No, the end be all. I'm sorry. It was good. I don't want to focus on that. But again, it's here's what I don't get. Like you say, he wants to be a top six. The plan was for him to be a top six. So who exactly was moving to the wing there? I mean, I mean, help me out. I'm not doing a great job of analyzing things.
When you
here,
give up, Donnie,
but no, was Pettersson moving to the wing? Was Miller moving to the wing?
Well, they did that for a game.
They did.
They moved Pettersson to the wing
with the Lotto line.
Yeah.
Yes, but what was the plan when he was first acquired? Jim Rutherford talked about him playing mostly on the wing in Carolina.
There you go.
And that's gone out the door. And if that's gone out the door, that means he's bottom six.
Yep.
I think.
And you don't give up a first round pick and prospects for a bottom six guy. I'm sorry.
Especially a bottom
and
six
they did
rental.
That.
And I think it's going to be tough
also.
Okay, you put him on the third line, but that once upon a time, that would have meant, hey, you're playing with Connor Garland and maybe Dakota Joshua on the third line. Those guys have moved up now and are doing really, really
That's
well,
a great
especially
point.
Garland in the top six. So it's going to be a tough spot for Lindholm, right? If he's between, Ilya Mikheyev and Pugh Suter or something, I think that can be a really good defensive line, but I don't know. Like that's asking a lot if you're asking Elias Lindholm to be kind of the offensive spark plug on a line like that going into the playoffs, I think.
Good point.
What? Thank you.
It's a good point.
A couple good points.
But on Connor Garland, I mean, what a remarkable night for Connor Garland Monday night at Rogers Arena. You know, the shirts from JT Miller, getting his name chanted, and just like the turnaround from September to Monday night. I'm not sure the last time we've seen kind of that type of journey over the course of a season for a player like Connor Garland's had this year.
Yeah. Well, although Dakota Joshua wasn't exactly out of the doghouse at the start of the year. And look
Hoglander, too.
With him. I love that. Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely. Great point. You guys are making good points today. As always. But, yeah, I love that night. It was to be at the arena on that night would have been so special with three players making history for the Canucks. Mm-hmm. What I really stuck out for me that night was afterwards and just how emotional Connor Garland got. Mm-hmm. On the and the on-ice interview done by Kate Pedersen afterwards, it was clear that when he heard his name being chanted, he got really emotional and choked up. And maybe he was thinking about, you know, how far he's come, not just this season, but, you know, going back to being a fifth-round draft choice and being undersized and all that. And all of a sudden he's got people chanting his name. The one thing with Connor Garland, for me, that really stuck out, other than that emotional moment the other night, but he has become, and you guys disagree with me if you want, but I didn't see this coming. He's an engine. He can drive a line, and I think he did, with all due respect, with Bluger and Joshua. And I just I talk about, like, Lindholm getting noticed, and you got to do that. And Garland does that game in, game out, going to the front of the net. He really drives, can drive this team.
He goes to the dirty areas. Look at his two goals the other night. Then he was a screen on the Hughes goal. This is the smallest player on the ice.
Yeah.
If the smallest player on the ice is going to the front of the net like that, there is no excuse for any other player on that team not to go to the front of the net.
Yeah. You know, Rick, who he reminds me of is Cliff Ronning.
Cliff Ronning.
I was saying that to you earlier
Rick
today.
Rick got it in first.
We had a submission.
He beat you to the punch.
Yeah.
He did.
Cliff Ronning.
Right. Hey, we had a submission. Cliff Ronning, he reminds me of Cliff Ronning a lot. There's no ifs, ands, and buts about it. And guys, go back to the first game of the season when the trade request, let me tell you again, it wasn't a trade request. And the agent has made that very, very, very clear. There was no trade request. In fact, that's his new agent. Going back to last summer with his old agent, never in the summer did he tell his old agent that he wanted out. So, you know, it was just a situation where this club and this new regime has been trying to get rid of that contract since the day they got there. You know, sorry, since the day they got here. But I don't think it was a trade request. I think it was just, hey, if you guys want to move them and the salary, we can help you guys. That's basically what it was.
Love the Cliff Ronning comparison, just because I'm always happy to be reminded of Cliff Ronning. I'd say he was a little more elusive in open ice, right? Garland does a little bit more lower in the zone. And just want to shout out this. Age 34, 35, 36, 37 seasons for Cliff Ronning. 62, 62, 54, and 48 points in the dead puck era. Can we just put some respect on that
gentleman's
name?
He had a great career. Over 1,000.
Massively underrated.
Over 1,100 career NHL games.
Yeah.
What a career for Cliff Ronning. What a note to end it on.
Hey. A proud former Coyote.
And
that's true.
Look at his numbers. Well, that's true. And look at his numbers in New West with the Bruins at Queen's Park. Unbelievable.
Don't get him started on New West. You'll be here for another hour.
Him and Brian Noonan.
Okay, here we go.
I'm telling you, him and Brian Noonan.
Oh, and that other guy who can't be named,
coach,
right?
And you know who, right?
And you know who.
Berube.
You know who.
Berube. It was Noonan, Berube, and Ronning. I'll tell you that much. Queen's Park, those guys ripped it up.
Cooperalls. All right, we got to go. Our producer's going to lose it on us here. Guys, thank you. Donnie and you know who, great work on the show today. We'll talk next week, guys. Thanks for doing it.
Nice, guys.
All right, that is Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal from Donnie and Dolly on Check TV. We got to go to break. Dom is losing his mind, so we'll be back
as
for more.
As he should be.
Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on The People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk. You're on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance, live from the Kintec studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at dunbarlumber.com. As mentioned, the Canucks play the Coyotes tonight, 7:30 at Rogers Arena. And it is also the 34th annual telethon for the Canucks for Kids Fund. And we're now very pleased to be joined on the line by the executive director of Canucks for Kids, Alex Oxenham, as well as board member Natalie Miller. Alex, Natalie, thank you very much for joining us today. How are you?
We're great. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's our pleasure.
Thank you.
Yeah, and look, we're really excited. I know this is a big day for fans and for the organization and for the team. Obviously, the annual telethon, always a highlight of the schedule. And Alex, we'll start with you, and then we can hear from you, Natalie. Just tell us what this day means to you.
Oh, this day is so special. It's one of my favorite events on our calendar because it really is all of our fans coming together from around the province and beyond. To support kids and families in BC. And it's amazing whether people make a small donation or a large donation. It all adds up to one big gift for these kids. And it's just such a special day.
Natalie?
Yep. Just sort of build on that. It's so much fun. There's so much energy in the rink right now that it's, I know everybody's excited for playoffs, but I love seeing everybody come together for such an amazing cause.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the most special things about it. I think, you know, about being for Canucks fans in general, feeling like a part of that community, that really special community. And certainly today is a big part of that. Tell us about some of the specific causes. I know there's way too many to mention here in just a few minutes, but some of the specific causes that if Canucks fans do donate, they'll be helping out today.
Yeah, so we donate to a variety of different organizations. You know, the big three, as we like to call them, are BC Children's Hospital, Canuck Place, and the Canucks Autism Network. But we also do a ton in the area of minor hockey, trying to provide access to the game, really giving kids the opportunity to play who might not otherwise play. And then there's a lot of organizations we donate to in a smaller way. So it's really hitting what we call our pillars, which is health and wellness, grassroots hockey, education, and social impact programming.
Alex, what should fans who want to donate, who want to get involved in supporting tonight, what should they know about making that donation during the telethon?
Well, first of all, we do call it a telethon because it is on television. There are no phone lines. Now it's a fun play on words. But fans can donate online at canucks.com/telethon. And although fans are so generous and they're giving because they want to, we do have a few incentives. If you donate before midnight tonight, you could be entered to win a 2024 Toyota Corolla hatchback. And if you donate more than $100, you'll receive a photo of Quinn Hughes and his captaincy. And if you donate more than $150, you'll get the Quinn Hughes photo as well as a photo celebrating our All-Stars this year.
That's very exciting. Some, as you said, look, it's great to give for the sake of giving, but a few incentives never hurt as well.
Exactly.
Anything else we should look out for on the broadcast tonight, or anything else you think we and our listeners should know about the event tonight?
Well, we've got some great guests, some great content. We're so grateful to everyone at TD, who's our presenting partner. Natalie and our entire board of directors, they're so helpful in spreading the word and bringing attention to the fund. And it's just really going to be a celebration of our fans, our beneficiaries, and hopefully a big Canucks win.
No doubt about it. Alex, Natalie, we really appreciate the time here. As we said, we're really looking forward to it. I know Canucks fans are in general. And again, you can go to canucks.com/telethon right now to donate as little or as much as you can. It all goes a long way. Alex, Natalie, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's Alex.
Thanks.
Thank you. That's Alex Oxenham, Executive Director of Canucks for Kids, and board member Natalie Miller joining us here to talk about the 34th annual telethon.
Always a great night, and best of luck to them. Best of luck to everybody. I hope Canucks fans, I hope our listeners certainly proceed generously as the broadcast unfolds this evening.
Again, Canucks.com/telethon, and if you do it before midnight tonight, you'll be entered to win a 2024 Toyota Corolla hatchback, as well as a signed picture of Quinn Hughes. Pretty cool.
Woo!
Dom, did you have something to add?
We have updates on the Arizona Coyotes from Wish and Frank Cervelli, if you'd like me to repeat.
Go nuts.
This from Wish: if the Coyotes relocate to Utah, an NHL source says that the Coyotes owner could sell the team to the league for $1 billion, and the NHL would sell the franchise to Jazz owner Ryan Smith for $1.3 billion. The owners would split $300 million.
Nice, tidy bit of business for,
yes,
for the owners. Nice little,
and they don't have
10
to,
million.
And they don't have to prop up the Arizona Coyotes anymore.
Yeah.
Also, that's nice.
Yeah. And this from Frank: sources say that Yotes players have been informed that something of a hashtag quote verbal agreement is in place to relocate to Salt Lake City, but we've received pushback on that characterization of talks. Nonetheless, this is well down the track. Let's see what happens next.
What's the hashtag?
Hashtag verbal agreement.
Sorry, that's so millennial of me.
Now,
hashtag
verbal.
I love Dom's in court. Your Honor, we had a hashtag verbal agreement on this.
Now, what's sort of interesting, and we've run into this a few times, you know, not all buildings built for basketball are good for hockey, right? Barclays Arena would loom large in our imagination.
If I'm not mistaken, the Utah one isn't either.
The Utah one, as I understand it, there are sections of the arena that will be used for basketball that won't be able to be used for hockey.
Why is that? What's the difference?
It's just a shape thing and on and on. Like, once you install an NHL, a standard rink, there's going to be areas of the rink that, you know, function for basketball that won't be able to function for hockey. That was my understanding when we were reading about this months ago, and I was sort of deep diving on the feasibility. The advantage that Salt Lake City has is the upcoming Olympics, right? There's the
2030, I believe.
Is it 2034, something like that?
I think 2030, but I could be wrong about that.
Yeah, 4 hours ago anyway, it was announced. This is from CTV. But yeah, looks like Salt Lake City's ability to host for a second time their zest for the Olympics, you know, we'll bring it back at some point in the next decade. And that's a solid excuse to build like a world-class hockey rink, right? And potentially do so in a public-private partnership. And, you know, the building will serve as the principal venue for the Olympics, at least from a hockey standpoint, which is obviously one of the signature events of the Winter Olympics, and then could become, you know, maybe it would be built in advance too, right? So an interesting sort of dynamic there. At the end of the day, even if this facility isn't perfect for hockey, man, it's going to be a big upgrade over Mullet.
Well, that's the thing.
You know,
like, perfection can't be the standard because they're playing in Mullet Arena right now. And you'd way rather have that arena situation with the solution on the horizon and really good ownership, which, look, we don't know yet, but every indication seems to be that Ryan Smith is motivated and has his stuff together much more so than Alex Morello.
No question. I mean, the Utah Jazz are run extremely well in terms of attracting, recruiting executive talent, right? I mean, Danny Ainge, they were like, this is a group that's done an excellent job in another sport, even if success hasn't followed neatly for Utah in the NBA. So a huge upgrade over the Morello group.
And by the way, just to the Dom's point there that he read, we got a little distracted by the hashtag verbal agreement, but from Frank Cervelli, for the Canucks tonight, we touched on this in the first segment. If you're looking for an edge for the Canucks, the distraction element, and Frank there reporting that, now he says sources say players have been informed about a verbal agreement in place to relocate to Salt Lake City. He also says he's received pushback on that characterization of the talks, but it sounds like this is not just something that players are going to be hearing about or reading about on social media, but they're being addressed directly, like morning of a game day. Hey, by the way, you might be moving to Salt Lake.
Yeah, which would seem to favor the Canucks. I mean,
you would
hard
think
to,
so.
But we also sometimes see the, you know, the inverse where a team has a huge distraction, so you might as well focus on the game.
The major league situation.
Yeah, 100%. You see it as like a rallying cry. We'll know fast when the game starts what sort of pace and edge Coyotes players are able to bring tonight.
Yeah, tough situation for the Arizona Coyotes. We will keep on this as it develops throughout the course of the show.
Yeah, and obviously anything's better than Mullet Arena, including Crew Cut Arena in Salt Lake City.
Dom, I'm gonna defer to you here. Do we have time to play Rick Tocchet before we have to go to break to get Jason Buchla on?
Why don't we just play him until we have to go to break?
We can't play the whole thing.
All right.
Yeah. Let's play the
snippet. Here's some of Rick Tocchet from earlier today talking to the media.
Yeah, they're just getting off the ice. I'll talk to Clarkie one final, but we haven't made it 100%, but it looks that way. But I've talked to Clarkie one more time.
Lindy, in tonight?
Same thing. I'll talk to him after the skate, but we targeted. This was kind of the game or the next game, so I'll see how he feels, and then we'll go from there.
Rick, going up against a team now that's out of the playoffs this part of the season, how do you lock everybody in for this group? Is it a different thing from what you guys just had in the game against Vegas?
No, we got to be locked in. I mean, we had a meeting about it today. You got to be focused. There's no reason for us not to be focused tonight. It's a big game for us, and we have to have the same approach we did against Vegas. Straightforward.
One thing Arizona does extremely well is their power play. They've been top 15, top half of the league all year long. How much emphasis do you put on the penalty kill tonight as kind of a challenge before the playoffs here?
Yeah, it's not even that. I think they've been one of the highest scoring teams. They've other than a blip there last night. What are they? They're 8-4 or something. They've had a great record the last 12 games. They're a sneaky team that scores a lot. Clayton Keller is dangerous. Play, you know, Schmoltz. Those guys can score. I had those guys. They're good, very good hockey players. So they're really good. Rush team, and when you play a team that's really good off the rush, if you're not focused, they can burn you. So that's kind of the emphasis. As much as their power play and our PK, it's the overall game for us.
When you played in the bubble in 2020, you talked about this the other day, the value of a third line and how it can make a major impact in the NHL in the playoffs. And it actually has for many years. What was your third line? Do you remember in the bubble in Edmonton? Especially when you played Colorado?
It might have been Gard, might have been on it. I can't remember. Okay. We had a kind of a different team, but if you just go from experience, the Pittsburgh days, you know, Kessel, Bonino, and Hagelin destroyed teams. And, you know, that's why the third line is, you know, you can go in history of, your first line's got to play great, your goaltender to win a Stanley Cup. But I just always feel that third line is a huge key in any kind of playoff series. So, or in any type of, you know, that type of pressure type of games, those third lines, you get good matchups with them.
Mikheyev talked of his experience with the Leafs and the fact that he thought it really suits his game, and he seems to be playing more on instinct. The speed is back, but he's playing more on instinct. What kind of an impact do you think Mick could make?
Yeah, I think his anticipation has been a lot better the last three, four games. He's anticipating. He's playing more predictable. When you have a fast guy playing predictable hockey, he looks fast. He's fast as it is, but he looks a lot faster. And I think when he waits too much, I think that's when he gets in trouble. So I just hope he gets on a roll, because I think his last two, three games, he's not really noticeable. And I think he knows where the puck's going, and he's going. He doesn't have that delay in his game.
Do you need a real veteran element on your third line? Obviously, Lindholm going is your obvious center, but you have options on the right side. Pods could play in the third, but do you like a veteran, been in the playoffs type of?
Yeah, I mean, you coach what you got, but I think it's important. You know, your third line has to have high hockey IQ, because sometimes they're against the best players, and sometimes it might be against the 5-6 defenseman on the other team. So there's some good matchups there you got. So, yeah, hockey IQ is big on the third line, 100%.
Rick, you spent a few years with the Coyotes. I don't know how much you've seen, but there's been some relocation rumors. What do you remember about the hockey culture and the market down there when you were with the team?
Well, I played in 2000, so I saw, you know, we had some good teams there and the buzz. So, you know, and then they had, I think they went to the Western Finals with Dave Tippett. They had a really good team. You know, it's there. it's too bad. It's just been so unstable. I think people are tired of the instability. Because what better place to sell hockey in there? The players love it. It's a great lifestyle. It's a healthy lifestyle, and they have great fans there if it's stable. I don't know what's going to happen. It would suck if they left because it can be a really good hockey market.
Quinn Hughes, I know you gave him the maintenance day yesterday. Do we kind of sometimes take for granted, like, the minutes he logs? It seemed in that game the other night when you guys were down two, he was the guy that kind of willed the start of the comeback. Healthy, productive. Like, do we often take that for granted just in terms of what this guy's able to do at this time of year?
Yeah, 100%. But if you look at his game, and we've played him a lot, you know, logged a lot of minutes. I think he was around 22, last game 22 around that, which is, if we could keep that number right now, that'd be really good. He's going to get higher minutes sometimes. It depends on the game. But he changed a bunch of his stuff in the summer, even his diet. I think the last month, it looks like he's got another gear. Like, you know, some guys get tired at the end of the year that, you know, you got to give him rest. But I honestly feel because of his diet, the way he's trained, he looks not even tired on the ice. He's been out there for a minute 10, and he has enough juice to get back. So I attribute that to his training and his diet for him to be being able to play. It's sustainable. I really do.
Rick, circling back on Arizona, you talked about it's a potential market, a great market, but they've only had like one or two really good teams that took deep runs in playoffs. How much do you think a lack of success has hurt that team in that market?
Yeah, I think that you can say that a lot of places, of course. I mean, you know, you got to make fans believe, right? And I think they've only had a couple of successful seasons in a 25 years they've been there? So, yeah, I mean, that's a big part of it. I mean, but I will say the minor hockey there is big. Like, you know, Austin Matthews, I think him being born there and playing out of that I have some buddies that coach there, and the Arizona minor league hockey program's really good, and they got a great facility at Ice Den. They just need more of those facilities to really make it grow. But I think the team's success obviously is going to make it different. Look at Vegas. I mean, you know, their minors, the kids' program now is getting bigger and bigger. Pittsburgh, the same thing. I remember they were bankrupt. I played there. I mean, it's huge now, and I think because of the crest.
Well, you look at Nashville. I mean, they've started.
That is Rick Tocchet speaking to the media, including, you know, as a former player in Arizona and a former coach, of course, most recently with the Arizona Coyotes, on his experience with that organization and the grassroots hockey there, but also noting the consistent failure to be competitive for the Arizona Coyotes as they are front and center in the NHL news right now. We'll take a break. Jason Bukala joins us up next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz here. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com. We are live from the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. It is the Canucks versus the Arizona Coyotes, the potentially relocating Arizona Coyotes tonight at Rogers Arena. 7:30 start, not entirely confirmed, but based on the team's optional morning skate, looks like Archer Shelovs will get a second consecutive start tonight. Also looks like Elias Lindholm could make his return to the lineup in tonight's game against the Coyotes. And joining us right now from Sportsnet's NHL coverage and a former scout in the NHL, he is our guy, Jason Bukala. Jason, how are you, man?
Doing well, fellas. How's it going today?
We're doing well. We're, I think, like everyone else around the NHL, we're, you know, focusing on the Canucks, but also talking a lot about the Arizona Coyotes potentially on the move to Salt Lake City. What's your reaction to the news?
I just want this news to I just want this to be solved for the good of the game. And I know that sounds like it's, you know, a little bit over the top, but I want everybody to put yourselves in the shoes or the skates, if you will, of some of these guys playing in Arizona right now. And, you know, you work so hard your entire life to play in the best league in the world, and they're stuck playing where they're playing right now. And even if they did get a deal done in Arizona for the foreseeable future, they'd be stuck in the same sort of scenario. It's not good for them. It's not good for the game. So the sooner this gets resolved, I'm all for it. Salt Lake did a heck of a job way back when hosting the Olympics. By all accounts, they got a lot of cash in the coffers there to make this happen. And I think it's a positive, a real nice positive for the league if this comes to fruition.
Books, I was up in the Okanagan this
Lucky
past
you,
weekend.
By the way.
Yeah, it was the good. It was sunny, 13 degree weather. But I caught a bunch of games, and most importantly, I caught the game in which the Kelowna Rockets advanced with Tej Aginla effectively calling game with his work on the forecheck, not necessarily his usual calling card, from what I'd understood or previously read. I want to drop. You know, one of my outlandish comps. I want to drop one of my outlandish comps on you, and see what you have to say, because you know I hadn't watched Tej Aginla play before, at least not live, and I was surprised by how much his game, specifically his anticipation, reminded me of Elias Pettersson.
Whoa. Yeah, that's I can see, you know, the brain is very similar. I'll absolutely give you that. So Elias, when I was scouting him in his draft year playing in the second level Allsvenskan in Sweden, you know, he was a little bit more stationary in the offensive zone and ripping pucks the way that he does now when he's going, you know, on the flank and stuff like that. I would say that the shot is a very good comparable. Mm-hmm. The brain is a very good comparable. I think Aginla's going to play heavier than Pettersson does on balance. But boy, oh boy, if Aginla can come anywhere close to that type of success, that would be a home run for whoever selects him. And the Calgary Flames will be awfully hard to go buy him, wouldn't they, with their first round pick? If they're staring at him at that point,
unless they end up in the middle, like unless they lose out here and end up like six, you know, where one of those defensemen will still be available. That feels like the suspense there.
Or Berkeley Cadden,
right?
You know, that's the other one. So I mean, do you want to? The one thing with the Flames that I think I'm interested in, as you know, your answer, like we've always had that philosophy, best player in the first round, right? Like you can't stray from that because you don't know if they're going to be yours forever. So you have to manage your assets. But at the same token, Calgary loaded up on a lot of defensemen in their trades that they made here in the back half of this season. Like they're pretty flush organizationally right now in the back end. So, you know, do they have some flexibility to play around a little bit in the top 10? Maybe. Or do they go after a forward because of what they've already loaded up on? If they're splitting hairs between a D and a forward, I think they probably go forward, but it's definitely going to have to be the best player. And I love Carter Yakimchuk from the Calgary Hitmen, like right in that 6-7 range too. So decisions. That's the fun part of the year.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I will say, fortunately for Canucks fans, you know, we're not paying as much attention to the draft this year. Obviously, they don't have a lot of picks in this year's draft, and they're looking ahead to the playoffs as well, which is really exciting. It sounds like Elias Lindholm might be able to return to the lineup tonight against the Arizona Coyotes. Obviously, the offensive production has been very underwhelming since he arrived with the Canucks. Then he was out of the lineup. What would you be looking for as kind of, okay, you're getting back in, there's four games before the playoffs here. What are the things you most want to see from Elias Lindholm when he does return to the lineup?
Details. So when you're not scoring, you're going to have to do the things that we require you to do to have or to contribute to our playoff success. Winning faceoffs on your strong side. We brought him in knowing that he could do that and do that well. Let's make sure we're digging in that way and, you know, checking appropriately in the defensive zone, hopefully winning draws so the team can start with the puck on that strong side of the ice, which is his, you know, the right side of the ice. That's going to be important. I don't want him to get inside his own head any more than he already has been. This isn't just a Canucks thing. This has been, for me, an all-year thing offensively. So I don't want him to get inside his head any more that way. I want him to understand that we have a process in place here that hopefully results in a run in playoffs, which means that even if we have to rely on you to be more of a checker or, you know, buckle down on the defensive side and do the small things, kill penalties, win draws, match up against middle six forwards, hopefully second line forwards, maybe top line forwards, then, you know, do those things to the best of your ability. And I think I'd be satisfied from this point going forward. So, scoring would come as a bonus, guys, but the rest of the detail has to be in place.
And, you know, when the Canucks made the trade, it sounded like they saw it as they saw him as a player who, okay, he's a center, but we would also be happy to play him on the wing, you know, get him in our top six that way, get him to help out our top six, at least on the wing. Now we've heard more recently from Rick Tocchet and, you know, even before Lindholm left the lineup, that they really see him as a center, which kind of pushes him down the lineup to that third line checking role, as you were saying. What is it, do you think, about Lindholm that makes him, you know, maybe not as effective when he moves away from center and goes to the wing?
Well, I think that he's a guy that when he is at his best needs to have space. And, you know, if you cut the ice in half on zone exits in your defensive zone, for example, and depending on how you play, you know, offensively, and then I guess tracking back, I'm kind of talking all over the place here. So many NHL teams now, whoever is the first one back checks low in the zone anyways. And you know, if you're F1 pressing up, you're hopefully going to get out of the offensive zone when you lose control, you know, on time. I just think that he's a guy that relishes open ice, and that's when he's at his best, finding some quiet ice and somebody else getting him the puck. I'm not sure he's a bona fide heavy lifter along the wall. He's involved, like, don't get me wrong, he's in the area, but I'm not so sure in the three hole, especially if we had to play him on the wing, that we're going to get the most out of him, especially considering I need him to win faceoffs.
With the way that this Canucks team is sort of built at the moment, Books, you know, if he ends up playing a third line role and his wingers are Mikheyev and Lafferty, you know, we all know that to some extent this trade's going to be judged off points and assists, but do we have to change our expectations for what a good Elias Lindholm game looks like if that's who he's playing with?
Yeah, I think we do. I'm not even at the stage now when we're this late in the season and I'm getting myself prepared for playoffs, I'm not at the stage that I'm really caring so much about whether he scores or not. I know that sounds a little absurd because clearly we brought him in for that secondary level or secondary layer. I get it. But we have to deal with reality, and reality is what it is, and he struggled that way. So, you know, I'm looking for process from the Canucks right now. Let's just look at it from a team perspective. For you guys there, you know, on radio and in the booth and in the media and then the team and then the community, like, we're about to host our first home game in like 10 years, I think, almost a decade, right? So I don't really care about where guys play. I just care about the process and how they contribute in whatever role they're thrust into. And I'm sure that the coaches are going to communicate what their expectations are for a guy like Lindholm and just maximize what that is. Us people on the outside, yeah, you're right. We're going to judge it by points because that's just, you know, that's human nature when it comes to trades like this and the expectation that he brought. But I don't think it's a reality right now. So I'm okay with that. You know, if it evens things out, you know, I wish he was a little bit heavier if he is playing the wing, because the one thing I want to point out, and I watched the Vegas game pretty religiously the other night for details, and, you know, like, when Pettersson's up ice and McNabb's giving him an extra one and then an extra one, and or we're in the defensive zone, you know, and Hughes gets run over or Barbashev, I think, ran over somebody as well. I forget right now off the top of my head, but I'm more concerned about the heavy lifting that's going to go on for the Canucks than I am about Lindholm chipping in offensively. Although I would love to have it, obviously. I'm not an idiot. I want it, but I'm not expecting it right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough when you give up the package that they did to get him. You want that offensive production, even if it ends up that maybe his best spot in the lineup is on the third line. That's a bit of a tough pill to swallow when you paid as much as you did for a rental player in Elias Lindholm. You mentioned you watched that Vegas game. Obviously, Canucks got a big come-from-behind win. And last week when we had you on, you know, we talked at length about some of the struggles of Elias Pettersson recently. And in that game against Vegas, you know, one assist, but the most noticeable thing was, and we talked about it a lot here in Vancouver after the game, was he's right in front of the net for the first three goals, and he was very physically engaged, even, you know, along the boards, on the forecheck in general. How promising a sign is that for you from Elias Pettersson, that he's doing the work, screening the goalie, and also really physically engaged?
Like right net front, like right in the middle of the ice net front. Really good. So, you know, you're in the battle, right? And good things are going to happen when you're in the battle. And let's not forget that people are going to overcheck a player like this, if that makes sense. Like, he's always on the radar. So when he's in the heart of the battle all the time, it opens up space somewhere else on the ice, hopefully. Or if pucks get through traffic, you know, he's part of that equation. So I like it. I like it a lot. It's a necessity, guys. It's an absolute necessity. Playoff games aren't won from the outside. You're going to have to get to the inside, and it's gonna take a toll on your body to get it done. But I feel good about it. I feel better. I've been breaking them down, you know, like we talked about it last week. I'm actually running something on .ca tomorrow, just, you know, on the entire year and on balance, what I'm seeing. And I like a lot. Like, I really do. I feel like this is a, team with Demko coming back that can do some good things in playoffs here. So fingers crossed. But him, like those types of guys getting in the battle, getting into the hard areas, like Connor Garland, how good was he the other night? Mm-hmm. Honestly, like, holy.
Unreal. God.
Like, I was crapping on this guy last year. Like, I really was. I was crapping on a few guys. And you know what? They deserved it too. These are multi-million dollar athletes that weren't playing near the potential. But now, structure, desire, drive, I really like it.
With that game against Vegas, you know, sort of restoring some sense of like vibes and hope in a market, given that this team had played a few weeks of uninspiring hockey, how careful do you have to be in evaluating teams at this portion of the year, especially teams like Vancouver that have, you know, sewn up everything that's really relevant?
Yeah, good one. I, you know, you have to take... It would be wrong to overhype the negative. Just like if they were on a complete heater right now, you know, and they'd run off 10 in a row, it would feel great, but you'd still have to take stock of what's on the horizon. So I think that the body of work is really important to take into account. I mean, listen, guys, this team is, if you go from goals against to goals for year over year, they're a plus 80. In the differential category. Think about that. That's like
ridiculous.
An extra goal a game.
Yeah.
That's absolutely insane. Like, there were teams in the 90s, the New Jersey Devils, that if you gave them an extra goal a game, you might as well mail it in. You know what I mean? Like, it was over. So the improvements that they've made on balance, you know, the PK, I need that PK to get over 80% come playoffs. I just think it's really super important. The penalty kill, or pardon me, the power play has always been kind of right in around 22%, somewhere around there for most of the year, which is kind of on plane for last year too. So if we can get that penalty kill up around 80, you know, good things are going to be able to happen here, but it's gonna be some heavy lifting by everybody. I feel like Vegas is close to the best version of themselves right now. Like, they're trying to get inside opponents' heads. They're trying to play a certain way. And for the Canucks to be resilient enough to pull that out the other night, it's a good news story. But it all starts for real in a week and a half.
We know your affection for this team and the way they've played. Is there a team among that LA Vegas tier that Vancouver's most likely to face in the first round that you'd most like to see this team face?
Nashville. Never mind LA or Vegas. I'd like to see them play Nashville in the first round. I think that that's I like that matchup for them. I think that it matches up well. But I gotta be honest with you, if I'm sitting in Vancouver right now, you know, again, part of Rick Tocchet's process has been exactly that. Like, they never have – this is a team that's done a very nice job of never really straying from process. If they're chasing a game or leading a game, the coach has had an expectation. So I think that positions yourself well mentally come playoffs. So don't be afraid of anybody. Like, you guys are a top-tier team as well. You've earned this right. You know, you're a hard out. You're going to be a tough out. All these teams are going to be tough outs. But I'm not afraid of anybody. I have to say that. I think that we've made incredible improvements in a lot of areas. I guess, you know, I wish we had one more big physical body outside of Joshua, you know, somebody like that that could really play that kind of a game. I wish that, but we don't. And, you know, that is what it is. So some other guys are going to have to do a little bit more that way. But I'm fine with it either way. I think that they'll be able to break down L.A. over a seven-game series with the 1-3-1. And I actually think that they can, you know, Vegas is going to try and out-physical them and outweigh them. But I think Vancouver, you know, when they're playing their best and they're really pushing the pace and track meeting it a bit up and down the ice, not just up north going north, they're coming back the same way. They're a real tough out. So I like it. And the goaltender. The goaltender is a wild card, right? So, you know, Demko's a Vezina quality type goaltender, and hopefully he's 100%.
Yeah, hopefully he's 100% and maybe even a little more rested than he would have been otherwise going in to the playoffs. Jason, your biggest story other than the Coyotes that, of things actually happening on the ice around the NHL, it might be the Hart Trophy race right now. And of course, Nathan MacKinnon, phenomenal effort last night for the Avalanche, but lots of good candidates, obviously Connor McDavid, Nikita Kucherov, Austin Matthews. I'm going to put you on the spot here. If you were voting, who do you think would be number one on your Hart ballot right now?
Right now, it's Connor McDavid, 2 points or just either hovering around or just over 2 points per game since about a week into Chris Knobloch's coaching career there in Edmonton since they made the change. If I had to vote based on the last 6 weeks, it's Sidney Crosby, by the way. Like, holy jumping. That Pittsburgh team, like, it's incredible. Can you imagine a day, even 5-6 years ago, where we would have thought, okay, Crosby's still going to be a point-a-game guy, and Malkin's going to be hovering around 60 points for the whole year? Like, the difference between Crosby and Malkin,
yeah,
and Malkin in the scoring in Pittsburgh is ridiculous. But MacKinnon, you know, like, you know, I'm splitting hairs, aren't I? It's McDavid. I love MacKinnon. He plays like he's just, you know, he plays every day like it's his last day, and I love that about him. But it's McDavid for me.
Jason, thank you as always. Really appreciate it. We'll talk again next week.
Awesome, guys. I can't wait for this to get started. So
I know, right? Only one more hit before with us before the playoffs start.
Let's get it on. Let's get it going.
That's right. Thank you. That is Jason Buchla from Sportsnet's NHL coverage, former NHL scout, joining us here on the show today. And, you know, he brought up Sidney Crosby there and what he's done. And look, I know it's a nice story. I don't think, even if the Penguins do make the playoffs, that given how strong the rest of the field is, I don't think Sidney Crosby would be on my Hart ballot. The thing I find most remarkable is that it's the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Washington Capitals, the Sidney Crosby Penguins and the Alex Ovechkin Capitals fighting it out. Now, there's other teams that are still alive there, but fighting it out for that final playoff spot in the Eastern Conference. And I just think of like, okay, here, I'll actually throw this to you.
There's so many different things I want to talk about how bad the East is.
Dude.
So please.
So here's, I'll start with this one because I think it's kind of off the radar, but it should be a bigger talking point.
Okay.
Which team that isn't going to make the playoffs or is at extreme risk of not making it? And I'll throw Detroit in here. So Detroit, Philly, going down the list, Buffalo, Ottawa. I'll even throw New Jersey in there.
Yeah,
which team should be most embarrassed about how their season has gone? If they miss the playoffs, given where the playoff bar is going to end up. Because that's what I'm looking at, thinking like Ottawa, Buffalo, Detroit, where these young teams on the rise. This is our year. And the playoff bar is going to be like 88 points.
Yeah.
And you're not going to sniff it.
It's New Jersey.
Some of those teams.
It's New Jersey. It's got to be New Jersey. They just waited too long on Ruff. They waited too long to address their goaltending situation. I don't know what went wrong. Like, I honestly don't know what went wrong. Even when we saw them earlier in the year, I was like, this team's going to figure it out. They weren't playing as badly as their results early in the season, and then they began to. You know, and they just can't hold a lead. Like, they coughed up that lead to Nashville. They coughed up a lead to Toronto last night. Like, just so soft defensively. It's stunning.
And the point you made about just waiting too long, like, again, this is not, it's not like they're going to need 96 points to get into the playoffs here. If you just go a month earlier on those things, it could be completely different.
100%.
For that team.
It's because, like, Philly, Detroit.
Well, Philly was, Philly.
So Philly, Detroit are kind of in rebuild mode still. Like, they're at least still making.
Detroit is, but they've spent a lot of money in free agency
the
last couple years.
They have, but they've also accumulated draft picks and a variety of other things. And you've had, like, a Lucas Raymond breakout. Like, you've at least had some of their key guys develop, you know?
Philly is a special category because it was so like, wow, where did Philly come from until the last, like, 2 weeks? And then it's like, oh, my goodness.
One of our inviolable show rules, if you think about it, is as follows. John Tortorella teams start out focused, show excellent process indicators through about January, and then meat wagon hockey catches up to them, and they fade, partly because Torts wears people out, and partly because Torts wears people out with deployment, right?
Like he wears them out physically and
emotionally. Yeah. And so, like, you end up with this withered husk down the stretch, which, I don't know, sound familiar to anybody here? This was, like, the perfect distillation of the John Tortorella experience.
Getting the absolute most from people, but just not in a sustainable way.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, like, I don't know. That, what a mess. What an absolute disaster that is in Philly. But I do think,
at least they have, like, Michkov, and again, no one, in some ways, like, there's a segment of Flyers fans, hardcore Flyers fans online, who've been, like, openly rooting against the team all year because they want better draft picks. They want the this Briere rebuild to remain focused on the future. So, you know, I don't know. Philly is, like, last on the list.
If they are, it's just that it's been such a horror show.
Well, last night, I mean, getting dummied by the Habs like that is.
Yeah. And you know things are bad when even Torts is, like,
relocate to Salt Lake
after
City.
The game. You know what I mean? When Torts is like, oh, yeah, those are good guys. Don't forget when I called them soft just a few games ago. It's like, uh-oh. I can't stop looking at Ottawa and Buffalo. I feel like they've, like, ducked some of the heat they should get this year because...
No, not the Senators.
Not in their markets, obviously, but it's like,
Hot Pierre Summer.
And I know Sabres fans are furious with the Buffalo Sabres.
That team...
But it's like, you couldn't even keep up in this playoff race?
I know. That team, though, is, I think, in less trouble in some ways than Ottawa, Philly.
Oh, I think Buffalo has a brighter future than Ottawa, for sure.
Well, I think Ottawa's got a decently bright future. You just need to rebuild the blue line and bring in a good coach. I mean, that's not too different from what the Canucks managed in, I mean, 2 years. Like, I would say it took Rutherford solid 18 months, 18 to 24 months to get it right. But, you know, find the right coach, bring in a couple D. Oh, man, that Corpusalo deal. Oh, that's bad. We knew it, too, the day it was signed. We were just like, what are they doing?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
But, yeah, I just, man, the East is an absolute, absolute mess outside of the top teams.
Well, I also do sort of think because Buffalo and New Jersey struggled so mightily and weren't even in this turtle derby, right? I legitimately think you got a bunch of teams that are, like, truly among the league's worst fighting for this playoff spot. Like, true talent level, you know, the Washington Capitals minus 40 goal differential. The New York Islanders have been a mess 5-on-5 all year despite a good power play, minus 21 goal differential. The Flyers, I think are an extremely limited personnel group playing an unsustainable style of hockey. Detroit has been riding insane percentages all year, right? Like, Detroit can't beat the charges that the Canucks have. And then Pittsburgh, you know, they're old and a little bit slow, but actually is probably the best of those teams. And I just genuinely believe, like, Seattle's better than those teams. Minnesota's better than those teams. St. Louis is better than those teams. Calgary is better than those teams. You know, I just think we ended up with this weird playoff race where it was like the 20th to 26th best teams in the league are all fumbling it. And it's like, yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, they're all terrible.
Yeah.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll wrap the show up with the whiteboard today coming up. Final segment here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.